All right, so we're back in Mike Swanson's office. Hey, you've done something interesting again, man.
Good to see you again. I love this. Yeah, I love this.
Every time in your spare time, you write some new algorithm, and this time, what'd you do?
So I posted this blog over the weekend that's generated a little interest, which I think is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Let me start by, PDC 2008, baby, right? Coming up in October, and I happen to be the content owner. So this is important to the story. And some feedback that kind of leads to what we're going to discuss here today is for prior PDCs, mixes, tech eds, there's this, as a matter of fact, I'd even extend it outside of Microsoft. There's this common problem, and that is if I'm going to pay money and schedule airfare and go all the way to some event somewhere, right, I want to attend the sessions that I want to attend, right, my favorites or my most desired sessions. Mm-hmm. And what happens oftentimes at a lot of big events is so many sessions are running simultaneously, like 15 at a time, that you're able to go to one, but what do you know, two of your other favorites are in the same time slot, so you miss them.
Sure.
Right? So it sucks because you don't get to see all your favorite stuff. This is a known problem in conferences. There's lots of research and paper that's done on this. The classic way to tackle the problem or attempt to tackle the problem is to come up with tracks. Right? Other conferences have tracks, both academic. We have tracks. And the idea is there to really, you can think about them kind of as like mini conferences. So like at PDC 05, we had a presentation track. So all the presentation sessions were really just scheduled in a, let's just say, a set of rooms running through the entire event.
So presentations being like WPF or presentation layer.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So it's all the sessions related to some reasonable
some
topic
theme.
Slice.
Right.
But you still don't get around this problem. So couple that with some other pieces of feedback, or research, I should say. People don't attend tracks, and what I mean by that is they don't literally just sit in the presentation track and stay there the entire time. Some people do, don't get me wrong. Most people don't, though. Most people will use the tracks to maybe help them navigate the different choices that they have, but they hop, right? You probably do the same thing. I know I do the same thing. I'll go to a couple presentation ones, because maybe I'm a presentation guy, whatever that means. But otherwise, I'm going to jump over to data, I'm going to jump over to tools and languages. I'm all over the place.
Of course.
So at the end of the day, this becomes a very nasty thing from a conference scheduling perspective. It's like, how do you create the master schedule for when all the sessions are, so that your attendees actually get to attend most of the sessions they want to attend.
So let's just talk about this briefly.
Yeah.
Again, I want to kind of address what you just said. So what you're saying is that as somebody who is designing a schedule for a conference, you have an added challenge of making sure that the way that you design it gives people who come to the conference a better chance of getting to see everything they want.
Absolutely.
So, but that's just kind of, I wouldn't say it's counterintuitive, but it's an interesting problem because I usually never think about that. I think about, if I'm going to the PDC, I want to learn about all the new things that Microsoft's working on. I also want to learn about what they, some interesting things that we can't talk about yet because
I
don't know anything about it yet.
Right.
But
what are you talking
anyway,
about?
wait a minute. What's going on?
Right.
That's good. All right. So I just wanted to ask that kind of
question. It's good.
So this is for you.
This is, well, it's to help me make an agenda, but the whole goal of doing this is attendee satisfaction. I'm going to maybe sound like I'm spinning or marketing here, but if you think about it, it'd be fairly trivial for me to come up with tracks, for us to say, well, you got to hear the keynote before you hear the 200-level session, and then I'm going to take you to some 300-level deep dives and then some 400-level system internals. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not too difficult to do, honestly. But I've taken none of your preferences into account in that scenario, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that you're going to show up and you're going to miss some of your stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things before we talk about this algorithm that we've tried to do to mitigate this, right? Because this is attendee dissatisfaction. I didn't get to see all the stuff I wanted to see. So starting with PDC 2005, we recorded every single session. We put it all out on the internet completely for free for anybody. Didn't even have to register or give us any sort of an ID. We've continued to do that and evolve that process at MIX 06, 07, and 08 now. As a matter of fact, at this year's in March, at MIX 08, we actually recorded the sessions and turned them around. I think it was an average of 12 hours or 8 hours somewhere in there. So it's not as big of a deal anymore. If you missed a session, you can catch it probably the next day or within the next day. But that's still not the same as being in the room and being able to ask your luminaries questions and interact. So the whole reason that this is even an interesting problem is not so that we can schedule it from my perspective. Mm-hmm. It's so that we can make a schedule that satisfies the needs of most attendees. That's honestly why we're doing it.
Okay. So with that said, let's jump into this algorithm.
You bet. You want me to draw on the whiteboard, don't
let's
you?
Let's do it.
Just point to that whiteboard.
Well, I think it's something that, we're going to do more on Channel 9. Just focus on algorithms.
So, by the way, I want to make the point that I'll draw the parallel to Hollywood movies, right? The sign of a Hollywood movie that uses special effects appropriately is one where you don't notice the special effects and it serves the story. Mm-hmm. Right? It's there for a reason. It serves the story. Mm-hmm. This algorithm, even though it's kind of geeky and fun to talk about, mm-hmm. is all here to serve the story. Right? It's to serve that story that we're going to lay something out that you might not even have noticed if I never blogged about it, other than you'd come away from that conference going, wow, I got to see everything I wanted to see. Maybe you missed a couple, mm-hmm. but for the most part, I got to do what I wanted to do, and that's, of course, that's the definition of success. So,
right,
so let's draw a little bit.
Cool.
Let's see, I'm going to get black.
Okay.
Black shows up good on your
white.
Camera.
All yeah, right. Black on white.
Black on white, I love
well.
It. So we've got a just kind of give you a layout of what we're thinking about here. Obviously, we've got a set of rooms. Oops, if I can spell. Right, rooms. We've got a bunch of rooms mm-hmm. at the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Uh-huh.
We've got a bunch of sessions. Right, a bunch of sessions that we're going to have across the entire event. For PDC05, just for context, we had over 200
yeah.
individual pieces of content that were recorded and later delivered. So we've got rooms and sessions. Now, of course, there's a bunch of constraints in this problem. Right? At the easiest, you could just imagine a calendar, and I'm going to drag a bunch of stuff all around and make sure that certain things happen before certain other things.
Mm-hmm.
One of those constraints is, and this is going to seem obvious, but it's algorithms, right? Is that at any given time slot, which, by the way, I haven't even listed time slots yet, and of course there's many time slots,
mm-hmm.
but in any particular one time slot, right, I'll have a room associated with that and a session associated with it, right? So it's a session in a room at a particular time slot.
Okay.
Got it?
Got it.
So I can basically make this list of, I'll call it time slot / room, right? Dot, 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 dot. This basically big list that I can index that has all the first time slot with all the individual rooms, next time slot with all the individual rooms, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You get the concept. Now, my goal as an algorithm is many-fold. There are a lot of dependencies and tricks here. So I'll throw them out. I'm not going to be able to include them all in the discussion, but you'll understand how they fit kind of the perspective.
Okay.
So I've got sessions that I need to assign, of course, at the end of the day to each one of these slots over here.
Okay.
But there's lots of constraints on sessions. It's not just I can put sessions whenever I want to put them. Mm. I had used an earlier example, and let's see, I guess I'll just let me draw it in different colors so we can just keep this diagram separately. But if I think of kind of the conceptual version of the way you'd ideally want to give content, of course we've got keynotes. You can think of them maybe as 100 level, and what I mean by that is pretty introductory to new concepts. We may reveal some news, talk about new technologies at a pretty high level, right? That's mm-hmm. the point of the keynotes. You leave a keynote, and you probably go to what we typically call, we call them anchor sessions. But they're like 200 level orientations or overviews on, you know, some deeper dive. So let's say if we had tracks in our classic model we were talking about, mm-hmm. I'd probably have an anchor session on the presentation track. Here's all the stuff about presentation that you heard in the keynote. I'm going a little bit deeper for you. And then I orient you or guide you to the next level of depth. And the next level of depth would be these 300 level sessions.
Okay.
Right? So these are a little bit deeper dives, less PowerPoint, more code, right? Geekier, fun stuff where we start to light up and get excited. And then underneath each of these, we'll do some 400 levels, which is, you know, PDC unique content, system internal stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else. It's the ninja moves for the developer.
Got it.
So this is in an ideal world. Now, what I've implied here are some dependencies, mm-hmm. right? Before I give you this content, I should have given you an opportunity to attend this session, which implies that it's ahead of it in time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you should have been able to get to the keynote before that as well.
Okay.
In an ideal world. Turns out this becomes a nasty problem, and that can't always happen, but we want that to happen.
All right.
Some other things. If you've been to the Los Angeles Convention Center, I know you have.
It's big.
It's a big, big, big space. And you have to, you know, pick up your butt and walk across that convention center. That's a big distance.
Sure.
So other things that could come into play is, if we were using the classic track structure, it might be, well, all the sessions related to this, we'll just kind of keep on this side of the convention center and another set over there. But because of the reason I told you that people hop, it doesn't work out that way, and you're sweating by the end of the day because you're running back and forth. So, but still, this notion of how far do I have to go to get to all my favorite sessions is a big one, right?
Sure.
Wouldn't you rather go to all your favorite sessions without having to walk as much?
Yes.
So there's another constraint that's nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
Some other constraints are speakers. I haven't even put them in here yet, but obviously each session has to be associated with one or more speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Those speakers can't be in the same time slot, right, in two different places.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're delivering more than one session, you got to make sure they're not scheduled at the same time. Right, and I can go on with more and more of these things.
So that's really interesting.
But basically, there's tons of constraints and requirements.
Insane constraints. For example,
insane.
If everybody loves Anders and everybody loves Guthrie,
and who doesn't, right?
Sure. So you got to be careful that you don't what you're just saying is you don't schedule Anders and Guthrie at the same time.
Yep.
Because then you have massive conflicts.
There's some other ones that you're kind of talking about right now, and that is room capacities.
Oh.
Right? At the Los Angeles Convention Center, it's a big space, but they're divided into rooms, dude. So each room can only hold so many people. And we go from big rooms where we hold a couple thousand people all the way down to smaller rooms that may only hold 200, 300 folks.
Hmm.
Right? So who do I put where and how?
Very interesting.
So what we try to do, and you'll remember this from prior events, is we do a pre-conference session survey, which basically, and matter of fact, a lot of people see this survey and say, oh no, I'm signing up for my sessions ahead of time. It's not the case. What we use it for is to plan room capacities. So sometime just prior to the event, let's say a month out,
mm-hmm.
we'll publish all the sessions that we know about, which are most of them. We'll say, hey, if you were to attend today, which ones do you want to see? We then do some math on the back end and project, you know, where we should put these things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's capacity constraints, right?
Indeed.
In a naive algorithm may say, when I explain how this works, when I start scheduling things, well, it's okay that if I fill, you know, that I fill this room to 100% capacity, but there's another room with only 25% filled,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, if your numbers were dead on accurate, that would probably be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they're not. It never
sure.
works that way in real life, so... What I don't like about that schedule is this room is full, and if more people go into it because it's Anders, well, now we're in trouble. Now we get overflow, and there's a bunch of challenges there. So in an ideal world, I would love all of the rooms to balance how full they are.
Hmm.
Right? So there's even more. I could keep I could keep throwing these out.
Hmm.
But the point is, this is a problem that doesn't have an easy solution. And that really is what leads us to the algorithm that we're talking about.
Sure.
This is an optimization algorithm that we've decided to try out for this year's PDC. And what that basically means is, I could lay all these constraints out, and I have,
mm-hmm.
And you could come up with an algorithm that comes up or scores all of the possible solutions. I don't know what the number is, but running any sort of deterministic run every single solution through,
mm-hmm.
the thing would take forever. You'd never be able to get a result out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it demands an optimization algorithm, of which genetic algorithms are part of that class of algorithms.
Cool. And that's the first time you'd mentioned that it's going to be a genetic algorithm.
It took me this long to just tease
that's
out
awesome.
This genetic algorithm. But it's the class of optimization algorithms.
Mm.
The other one that we can talk a little bit about is simulated annealing, which is in the same kind of class of space.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you've got a problem that you can't solve in a reasonable time frame,
mm-hmm.
if at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to come up with a faster way to come up with a reasonable solution. It might not be the absolute best solution, but it will be certainly among the best solutions.
Okay.
So in this case, let me erase this diagram.
Yeah, you can erase that. I think we need to get the constraints.
Yeah, get that. I'm going to keep the time slot slash room thing, because this is basically what we need to schedule our sessions into, right? Each one of these should be associated with a session.
Okay.
We might even have a couple empties, by the way,
hmm.
right? Because we might have fewer sessions than we have complete room capacity, and that gives some flexibility to the algorithm to move things out of the way and some wiggle room, I guess, if you want to call it that way.
Nice.
So the way genetic algorithms work, and the reason they're called genetic algorithms, is because they're like genetics, right? And if you think of survival of the fittest, that's the best little short phrase to remember for genetic algorithms.
Mm.
And that is, I've got this population, or I'll call it population. And in that population, I've got possible solutions, right? So I've got solutions here, dot, dot, dot. So just like a population of individuals or creatures or something organic, I've got all these possible solutions. And the idea is that we're going to create this generation of solutions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come up with some way to figure out which one of these is the most fit. Okay, again, survival of the fittest. It literally comes down to a fitness algorithm
mm-hmm.
or a fitness computation. And a fitness computation in this particular world would be, let's take an actual example. So in this population, I'm going to generate a solution. It's going to be random. Right? And when I say random solution in this problem space, that would be a random master schedule. So what it will basically do is it'll take all those rooms I had defined, all those sessions I had defined, slam them into this list.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have to score how good or bad is that particular solution, and that's what we call fitness. So I'll tell you a bad one right off the bat.
Mm.
Let's say in the same time slot, let's say this is time slot 1, 1, this is room A and room B,
mm-hmm.
but these are in the same time slot. If Anders is scheduled to speak there, and Anders is scheduled to speak there, we're in trouble, NASA,
yeah.
right? So that won't work. That immediately says that the fitness function for that is terrible, right? So I return a score that indicates terrible.
Okay.
Doesn't really matter if it's higher or lower, you just choose one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So we generate all these random solutions, we score fitness,
okay.
right? We keep track of the fitness for each of these, and then at the end of scoring them all, we do something called elitism, and that is we keep the best. So we sort all these solutions. So let's say that the optimal solution in this world, let's say, is zero. In other words, if I score a zero in my fitness function, that is a perfect schedule that hits every single constraint. Probably not going to happen, but let's say.
Okay.
Let's say our first one, though, is 1,000, whatever that means, because we haven't talked about the specifics. The next one's 2,000, 5,000. They're pretty ridiculously sized up there. Okay. And elitism basically says, let's take the top X. In my case, it's the top 20% of the population, mm-hmm. and these factors do influence output. But take the top 20%, kill off all the rest. Right? So we're going to start a new generation or a new set of solutions. Mm-hmm. We're going to copy these over immediately because we know they're good. They're top, right? Mm-hmm. They're survival of the fittest. And we're going to fill out the rest of this population with two different types of solutions. One is called mutation, and one is called crossover. Mutation is probably the easiest one to explain first. But basically take one of these solutions, and by the way, I haven't talked about what the solution looks like kind of in the code. Mm-hmm. A solution is just an array of things. So in my case, it's just an array of indices that indicate when sessions are in what time slots,
okay.
without going into all the details. It's just essentially a string of numbers that are meaningless unless you know how to parse it and understand it, of course.
Okay.
But the important part is it's just a stream of numbers. So when the mutation function runs on it, it basically takes, let's just say I've got 2, 5, 10, 11, 15, etc. In other words, this is a solution that encodes a master agenda or a master schedule. Mm-hmm. Mutation will just randomly take one of these numbers and mutate it, change it. So it'll change it up or it'll change it down. So it may change this to a 12, right? It's going to fill out many of these mutations to fill out our population. And for some of these, it's going to do crossover. And what crossover is, it's kind of like mating. Right? Hmm. You knew you'd get sex into this video, didn't you?
Got to, man.
So crossover is taking two solutions. Again, these are two solutions that are already in our elite. Right? So we want to breed the elite in this particular case, so to speak. So let's say I've got a 7, an 8, and a 5, and a 2, and a 1. Mm-hmm. What crossover does is it says, let me take two solutions that are among my elite, and I'm going to pick a random index point. Right? So let's just say here. And I'm going to take the second halves, and I'm just going to flip them. Hmm. Right? So I'm going to take this 12, what's now, I guess, a 12 and a 15 and a 2 and a 1, put the 2 and a 1 up here and the 12 and the 15 down here, right? And now I've got two of my elite solutions, basically cross-pollinating, if you want to think of it that way, mm-hmm. and I've come up with two different solutions. So now what I've done, just to kind of review, I had a population or a generation that I randomly generated, I scored, I kept the elite, I killed off the rest, I created a second generation, kept the elite, filled out the rest of the population with some that were mutated, some that were crossed over. Hmm. I just now repeat the process. I run the fitness function on all those things. I pick the elite. I keep the elite. Kill the rest. Next generation. So the way the genetic algorithm works is, over many generations, right, what will happen is the elite will tend to survive, right, based on their improved fitness. It's funny how this sounds like Darwin, because it literally matches it. And at the end of the day, after a certain number of generations, you will have probably not the absolute best score you could get, depending on the complexity of the problem, but a really, really good one.
Okay.
And that's kind of the notion of how the genetic algorithm works. So it literally relies on survival of the fittest to do its work. So if you ever doubted the survival of the fittest concept, you can implement an algorithm like this and just watch it work. Generally, in my case, with the algorithm I have and the way I've tuned it, it seems like 500 generations or fewer, I'm able to come up with a pretty darn optimal solution. And again, what do I mean when I say optimal solution? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, this means that you will be able to attend most of the sessions you want. And all those other constraints I told you about are in play.
Interesting.
Now, without going into the details of the fitness algorithm, mm-hmm. I can tell you kind of how you would score things or provide fitness, because this is one of the things you tweak from algorithm to algorithm.
All right.
Or I should say implementation. When I told you, one real hard constraint is that we can't have Anders speaking in two different rooms at the same time. Right?
Sure.
That's not negotiable. It will never work, even though Anders is skilled. I don't think he can do that.
Yeah.
So the fitness function, when it notices that, boy, Anders is scheduled two times in different rooms, it'll take this number and jack it all the way up. Right? In my case, I think it actually does int dot upper. I think, is it int dot upper?
Okay.
It basically takes the absolute value for that, or the highest value you could ever have for an int, and that's the score you get.
It's
the
worst max value.
I think it is in that max value, right?
Whatever
absolute
it is.
Worst score.
Okay.
So again, it doesn't make it untenable, but in the scheme of things, it's going to be considered one ridiculous. Of the worst. Yeah. And if you don't run into any constraints, you're never increasing your fitness, mm-hmm. you're going to end up with that ideal world zero that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. Rare to hit that in most complex problems, but very possible. So that's genetic algorithms.
Okay.
Now, the other optimization technique, which I've built in, and I'll try both of them, kind of play them off each other at some point, mm-hmm. it's called simulated annealing, which is mm-hmm. another optimization technique.
Okay.
And let's see. The nice thing about it is you can take the same solution, or at least the way you represent that solution. Mm-hmm. So again, my solution is represented as just a series of numbers, right? Like the ones I just mutated and crossed over there. Simulated annealing is named based on metallurgy. So like when you heat up a metal and then you slowly cool it or you control the cooling process, the idea, I think, I'm not a metallurgist, mm-hmm. but is that the molecules, as they slow down, will kind of settle into spaces that actually make the crystalline structure of the metal more solid. So the idea is by annealing the metal, you actually make it a more solid material. Solid's probably the wrong technical word, but what they've done is they've taken that concept of lots of random movement, mm-hmm. and over time cooling and slowing down. That's kind of the idea of simulated annealing.
Nice.
So if I took a fitness function, so let's just say my fitness function returns some number, right? We've been talking about this concept here for a while. Mm-hmm. And obviously if it returns a zero, it's good or great. And the higher the number is, the worse it is. Okay? Mm-hmm. If I were to take every possible solution, and we already said that there's so many it'd be ridiculous, but let's just imagine we could. And I could map out these values. Let's just imagine that maybe that chart looks like something like that, let's just say. I have no idea without running it through and figuring it out. Mm-hmm. But the point is, how do you avoid, a lot of these algorithms will tend, what they'll do, there's another algorithm in the same class called hill climbing. And what it will do is it will randomly pick a solution, let's say this one right here,
okay.
that comes out at this score. And hill climbing is pretty naive. It basically says, to the right of me or the left of me, which one's a better answer? And of course, since we're trying to seek zero here, it's going to go, oh, I'm going to climb the hill down. And it'll climb until it hits the lowest number it has before it ever goes up again. And it'll say, that is the best answer. Hmm. Right? Now I can look, and if I actually have something, let's just say this goes a little bit lower, this is a better answer, but hill climbing is never going to find it. It's called a local minima.
Okay.
But actually, in this case, it's a global minima because it's the minimum. Sure. Right? Here would be a local maxima, global maxima. But the problem is these algorithms will get stuck in these hills and valleys. So annealing and genetic algorithms are ways of avoiding that problem. So annealing works by saying, I'm just going to pick a random solution. Let's say it is there. Mm-hmm. Right? And at the beginning of the algorithm, you can think of it as heat. Matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if variables are called heat, where the heat is really high. Right? The metal is really hot. And basically, the higher the heat, the next solution that it picks can be really far away, either one way or the other way. Right? So based on the fact that it's really hot, you can just imagine this range of numbers it's gonna choose between. It's going to pick to try a solution way the heck over here. Right? And by the way, it's always going to keep track of where it's found the best solution to so far, so it can always go back to it. But okay. It's going to try this one over here. And because it's still hot, although it's cooling, it may randomly jump over here and see this one. And you can imagine it's just kind of bubbling through this graph, picking solutions and finding the best one. As the algorithm goes, it simulates the cooling of the metal. So the distance that this thing starts to jump from its best answer starts to get smaller and smaller, so it starts to kind of settle on maybe not the absolute best answer, but a very, very good answer.
Excellent.
That's kind of how simulated annealing works at a real high level. The nice thing is, the way I had represented the solution in my space was just a series of numbers. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to randomly come up with a solution regardless of the problem domain. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the implication here is, because the solution can always be represented by a series of sometimes characters, numbers, doesn't really matter, just bytes at the end of the day or bits at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you can write a genetic algorithm where the structure of the genetic algorithm will work on any series of numbers, right? So I can keep the same genetic algorithm, kind of the framework of it, mm-hmm. and move it into another project, or I can run simulated annealing against it because it knows how to work on just a series of numbers. It doesn't know what the numbers are.
Sure.
So the nice thing is you can kind of switch and choose different optimization techniques once you've built the framework for it. Okay. The trick really is the two things, and that is how do you use those numbers to represent like an agenda or a schedule or something like that.
Exactly.
And then the second piece is what does your fitness function look like, mm-hmm. right? So you can imagine a delegate where you can pass in a fitness function and then you've kind of got a generic framework for doing some of these optimizations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
So I don't know if I whiteboarded that very well.
No, you did. You explained the problem very well. Now, you know, of course, You used C-sharp?
I did, in this particular case.
Okay.
I like C-sharp, so it was natural for me.
It was natural for you.
The more I manage, the more I lose my my native and my other skills. So
sure.
I fall into what is productive for me, and C-sharp happens to be pretty natural to me.
That's perfect. So, yeah. I mean, I guess the question that I would ask is, what does the fitness function look like? In the you don't have to actually write it out.
Yep.
But, I mean, from an implementation perspective, I'm curious as, mm-hmm. as to what those numbers actually mean and
yep.
what that looks like in your code.
Yeah, so let me think. I'll try to describe this live.
Which is good.
Yep, it is good. It'll force me to think on my feet.
The audience, keeping in mind that you just released this done, what, on Sunday?
yeah.
All right, so cool.
So the idea is, and this is part of working with genetic algorithms, and mm-hmm. it is the classic problem is, how do you represent a possible solution using just a string of numbers? I know there's lots of ways you could think of coming up with something like that. But, so let me take this kind of, this imaginary, this array that I had over here of time slots and rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and again, I'll just say time slot 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 3, 3 for the sake of our example. A, B, C, A, B, C, A, B, C, right?
Yep.
It's all time slots and room combinations for our little sample here. Now, if I just use kind of the index into this array, so you know, 0, 1, 2, and so on, and I say, all right, well, I've got time slots and rooms. All I have to do now is match sessions. I'll leave all the other stuff out for now. Let's just say I've got sessions. Right? Matter of fact, let me draw it the same way. So I've got this array of sessions. Right? I've got session 0, 1, 2, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
One way of representing my solution, so we'll say this is a possible solution, is to say, here's my array slots. I could say, okay, well, just randomly, because you always pick a random one first. It's, let's see, I'm going to take session 2 and put it in slot 0. Right? So if I just basically say my solution represents ordering of the event this way, I just say that number 2 is in my first time slot, right? So in this array, I now know that session 2 is going to show up here in time slot 1 in room A. Got it?
Yeah.
Randomly pick some other one. Say it randomly hits a 0. So now 0. So now my agenda looks like session 2 first. And in room B, running parallel to it, I've got session 0. And you can imagine this going on across all the sessions that we have.
Yeah.
If you do this naively, which is of course, what you always seem like you start out with, the random function picks a 2 again. Now you start running into problems. You've got this random session now showing up not only in time slot 0, but you've also got it showing up here in this time slot here, right?
Mm-hmm.
During the same time, sessions presented twice, bad.
Yeah.
And if you allow this to happen across, 200 plus sessions, time slots, this thing ends up being pretty long, the chance of you coming up with not even reasonable agendas
mm-hmm.
is very high. And so that's a bad answer. The way we just came up with is a bad answer because you're going to generate so many bad, completely unusable solutions that you shouldn't even be considering them in the first place.
Okay.
So the way I've chosen to done this, and I do this, and I believe it's based, I've seen others that approach this problem in a similar fashion, is basically to, let me erase this. Let's say we know we have 200 sessions total that we have to schedule, right? So imagine my array 200 sessions long. And what I really need to do is for each of these sessions, put them into a particular time slot. So the way I do it is I basically say for index 0 in my solution, I'm going to pick a random session, or I'm sorry, I'm going to pick a time slot this time.
Okay.
So let's just say I randomly pick, let's see, 0, 1, 2, number 2 here. I'm going to put a 2 here. This basically means that for session 0, the first session, I'm now going to put it into the second time slot. Okay. And all I did is I took a random number between 0 and the number of time slot room combinations that I have. Right. So now what I do is I take this one out of the array. Now I can't animate it on the board here, but literally now this array would become one less in length. Hmm. But now that time slot is out of play. Right. So now instead of having let's just say 200 time slots, I only have 199 of them. So I now randomly pick a number between that and 199.
Mm-hmm.
And notice, if I pick a 2 again, matter of fact, if I just happen to hit a bunch of 2s,
mm-hmm.
this algorithm worked just fine. It's going to take this one out of play, move everything up, take this one out of play, move everything up.
Great.
And it guarantees that I'm never going to conflict, which means that every single solution that I randomly generate using that method
mm-hmm.
are at least considerable, something that you should consider
sure.
as a possible solution.
Excellent.
And then, of course, you run algorithm on all of this and do the logic that you could probably imagine that says, okay, here's what my agenda looks like. Do I have speakers in the same place at the same time? Mm-hmm. I can do some travel calculations on how long an attendee might go.
Yeah.
And I can just, you know, for bad behavior, I can give real high fitness functions, which means the algorithm will not prefer those answers.
Cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, by removing the data from the data source,
yep.
You're guaranteed not to have to read it again.
Exactly. And it seems to be, you know, I'm not a genetic algorithm expert, even though we're talking about it here, mm-hmm. but that particular issue, if you look at a lot of the algorithms out there, you'll see that they don't take that kind of thinking into account.
Hmm.
And you can run this algorithm all you want, but because almost every single solution is terrible,
mm-hmm.
right? It would still work because you're going to send a fitness function back that says, well, of course I can't do that. You've run the same session twice in the same time slot.
Yeah.
Right? It's just that you've come up with so many completely invalid and preposterous results mm-hmm. that it'd just be easier to eliminate them on the front end and not even consider them in the first place.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. So what you're saying now
yeah.
is that when I go to the PDC,
yeah.
There's going to be a likelihood that I'm going to be able to actually see most of what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So because of the way you've designed the schedule.
So that's the hope.
Okay. Right?
And what I also hope, I guess my ask to everybody out in Channel 9 world is, mm-hmm. if you're going to go to the PDC, when we ask for the pre-session survey, that data is of critical importance here. Right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to pick, let's say, the 5 sessions or the 10 sessions that you absolutely can't miss at PDC.
Mm-hmm.
I will use that data literally to feed into that fitness function. Mm-hmm. And it will say, if Charles can't go to 100% of his sessions,
mm-hmm.
the fitness function is going to jack up that number. If mm-hmm. Mike can't go to 100% of his, jack it up some more.
Interesting.
Right? So if everybody can't get to all their sessions, that score is going to be so high, it won't be among the elite and it won't survive to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, if it randomly picks one or mutates or crossovers one, that allows you to go to 100% of your sessions and allows Mike to go to 100%, I'm not going to penalize the fitness at all. It'll do a zero add to it, basically.
Mm.
And it'll bubble up to the elite. It'll be kept. It'll be mutated and crossed over so we can try some things that are near it,
mm-hmm.
right? Tweak some things, move some things around. And at the end of the day, hopefully we have a master agenda that probably won't get you 100% of your sessions, but it'll get you a lot higher than if we hadn't used this approach in the first place.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, this is really cool.
Hope it was helpful. Hope it made sense.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem at all. It's a joy.
To do this. Excellent. So we'll do more algorithms on Channel 9.
Algorithms. I can't wait to see the rest of the series.
Right on. Well, hey, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Charles.
Good job.